From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We have a great show for you today. We've got Stuart Copeland, former member of this 80s boy band called The Police. They'll be joining us later. But first, as many of you out there have already heard, our own Carl Castle has an announcement to make.
So long, suckers.
That's right. After 60 years in broadcasting, including more than 30 years at NPR, including, of course, being this show's official judge and scorekeeper from the very first episode, Carl has decided to lay down the microphone and become our scorekeeper emeritus. He will record voicemail greetings for all our winners. He'll hang around the office, and he'll make sure we don't lower our standards.
As if that were even possible.
Well, he'll be with us for a few more months at least. So with this show, we begin the Carl Castle farewell tour. In the meantime, we'll wring every last ounce of dignity from him. This means you've got a limited time now to speak to the man himself, so rush to your phones and call us at 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Ashley Kevitt from Brevard, North Carolina.
Hey, Ashley, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine. What do you do in Brevard?
Well, I just took the NC bar exam.
So oh.
I'm a quasi-lawyer.
You're a quasi-lawyer.
Come in.
You're a theoretical lawyer.
Right, right.
You're like a Schrodinger's lawyer. We don't know if you're a lawyer or not yet.
We would have to go to North Carolina to find out.
I understand. Ashley, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, it's a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. Mr. Adam Felber is here.
How you doing, Ashley?
Good, how are you?
Next, a contributor for CBS Sunday Morning, Ms. Faith Saley is with us.
Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
And finally, making his debut as a panelist on our show, it's a writer, director, and star of the film Sleepwalk With Me. You can catch him now on his 100-city comedy tour, Thank God for Jokes. It's Mike Birbiglia.
Hey, Ashley, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. There's nothing quasi about you, in my opinion.
I appreciate that.
Ashley, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you will win our prize, Carl's Voice, on your home answering machine or other similar device. You ready to play?
I'm ready.
Here is your first quote.
Our main concern is the orgy that is happening.
That was Vladimir Putin trying to make the conflict where sound much more interesting than it probably is.
Crimea?
Yes, Crimea in the Ukraine. Very good. Russian troops are flooding into Crimea, except Vladimir Putin, president of Russia, says they are not. He says they're just not there. Reporters are going up to Russian soldiers in the Crimea and saying, hello, so where are you invading from?
And invading?
Yeah, and the soldiers are like, New Jersey.
Student visa.
Yes.
This always happens when people win so many medals at the Olympics.
They get cocky?
They just get so carried away.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm great at skeleton.
I might as well head up the coast and invade Crimea.
Yeah.
Maybe he wants another medal in winter invading. All right, Ashley, very good. Here is your next quote.
Honestly, some of these words I've never even heard of.
That was a high school junior in Portland, Maine, happy about the proposed changes to what high school rite of passage?
The SAT.
The SATs, yes. The Scholastic Aptitude Test. That great universal ritual of adolescence, well, the one that you don't find in your father's sock drawer, is getting a big overhaul. The SATs are being changed, so we are told they will be more useful for kids preparing to go to college. They're making the essay optional. They're getting rid of the vocabulary words that no one ever uses, and instead will test students' aptitude for writing bad, self-indulgent poetry. tolerating lots of cheap beer and becoming a lesbian, but just for sophomore year.
The scores will range between awesome and who are we to judge.
Right.
Yes. I don't like this business about doing away with quote-unquote SAT words. I don't think it augurs well for the lexicons of the future.
What?
You know?
Oh, I speak mean, English.
I mean, I'm trying to have some sang-froid, but I mean, I just feel lachrymose about it. Everybody uses those words.
I feel like that was so thoughtfully put. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Faith, I wasn't told this would be in German.
I just got a 1500 on Faith's sentence.
Just Miss Sankfra.
Faith, I think, if I'm not mistaken, you will be pleased with this other change, is that after changing to a 2400-point scale, they're going back to the classic 1600-point scale.
Like in my day.
Exactly. Here. And what that means, Faith, is that you're about to have a second child. From now until time immemorial, you'll be able to compare your SAT scores to your children and show them that, yes, you're smarter than they are. All right, very good. Here is your last quote.
Al servizio degli altri, in questo caso. In questo caso.
That was somebody getting a little blue during a speech in Rome this week who accidentally dropped an Italian F-bomb on the Vatican.
Ooh, I really don't know that
well,
one.
Who would be a very unlikely person at the Vatican to swear?
The Pope.
The Pope, yes. The Pope made what we are told is a common mistake for non-native speakers of Italian. Instead of the word caso, which means case, he said cazzo, which is basically like the Immaculate Conception, but without the Immaculate part. In the video of the mistake, and this is pretty cool, speaking of sang-froid, he doesn't even flinch, he just goes on, right? But after that, he apparently walked back in from the balcony and said to his aides, man, I really cazzoed that up. And what's really ironic is that when he made that mistake, all he was trying to do was introduce a performance by Idina Menzel. it's a hard name.
What a cool pope.
He is pretty cool.
The Pope curses?
Yeah.
What people aren't talking about is his new hip-hop album, The Papacy, which I think it's too far. I think it's too
far. Nah, it's good. I like the way he just dropped the mic behind his back after he did it.
Carl, how did Ashley do in our quiz?
Ashley, you're a winner. 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine or voicemail.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you. Happy retirement, Carl.
Well, thank you very much.
Aww. Bye, Ashley.
We want to remind everyone they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Faith, scientists at the University of Indiana have pinpointed the best way to crush a man's pride. Next time you want to do that, what is that way?
I mean, it's beyond the obvious, like rejection or saying,
yes.
Is that all?
I don't see this answer topping, is that all? I mean, she wasn't even saying it to me, and I feel terrible about myself.
I know. She said it. People can't see me right now. I'm curled up behind my podium weeping. It's terrible.
Can I have a hint?
Here's your excuse. I don't know where that came from.
That was so much better than anything anyone could ever write.
Yeah.
Peter, I don't need any excuses. Just hold me.
Obviously, I'm having a
makes
combat flashback here. let's back up
and
say, here is your hint.
Okay.
It's like, after you, big guy, right this way, right through here.
Hold the door open for
exactly
a man?
Exactly that. Yes, to hold the door open for a man. Scientists say holding a door open for a man to walk through strips a man of honor, self-esteem, and power, not to mention the muscles in his arm will atrophy from lack of use. According to the journal Social Influence, this seemingly helpful gesture is really social castration. If you want to let a man feel good about himself, just let him do what he usually does and helplessly push on a door that says pull until he gets frustrated and kicks it.
Is this true, gentlemen, on stage with me? Is
the
this,
holding
is this the
door
worst thing,
thing
I can do to you is open a door for you?
That sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even you describing it is turning me on.
What are you doing after the show?
I enjoy holding a door for my wife, though. It's a nice thing. It's a
nice
fun
gesture.
Thing to do.
It's yeah. literally the least you can do. But it makes you feel
it
good.
Is. It yeah. is.
It makes you feel good, absolutely.
Yeah.
I had thought it was the most I could do. That was like, those were my all-star days you're yeah. talking about.
Held the door for her today.
Yeah.
What do you mean you're angry at me, honey? I held the door for you just yeah. last week.
You'd still be outside.
If I had...
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Mike Birbiglia, Faith Saley, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks so much. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Jason from Sacramento, California.
Hey, how are things in Sacramento?
Well, we just got a lot of rain. Otherwise, it was really dry.
Right, but you got some rain, right? So you're all set.
Definitely.
Would you like some snow? We have some.
Oh, we would love your snow.
Oh, we'll send it.
As you can ship us.
We'll ship it out. Jason, it's great to have you with us. You're going to play our game, and you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Jason's topic?
What is Castle?
Jeopardy, the show featuring smart people watched mostly by unemployed people, has created a few super champions who become famous for winning. This week we read about a Jeopardy champ embarking on a surprising new career. Guess that true story. You will win. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yes.
First, let's hear from Adam Felber.
Watson, the IBM supercomputer who took all comers back in 2011, is now a proprietor running one of these mobile businesses. If you answered, what is a food truck, you are correct. Debuting in Las Vegas last week and now on his way to the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, the former champion has found himself slinging hash for cash. Actually, Watson hasn't fallen on hard times. He's part of a novel effort by New York's Institute of Culinary Education, who persuaded IBM to help them discover new, innovative recipes. When asked, Watson will think up unique combinations of ingredients, like, for instance, Swiss Thai asparagus quiche, or Cuban-style lobster bouillabaisse with squash. It's all coming right up. And the secret ingredient with all of these is Watson's encyclopedic knowledge of what ingredients pair well, and the creativity and courage that can only come from never having to actually eat. Even program director James Brissioni was skeptical of the Silicon Chef's pork belly moussaka with cottage cheese, red bell peppers, dill, and cheddar. But after synthesizing a synthetic recipe and giving it a try, his verdict was, wow. Watson's verdict was, better you than me, brother.
So Watson, the supercomputer that won on Jeopardy, famously, is now running a food truck. Your next story of a Jeopardy winner looking for success in the real world comes from Faith Saley.
It's clear that all-time Jeopardy champ Ken Jennings loves trivia. Turns out he also loves making love. Making love happen between strangers. Yes, Ken Jennings is now a Mormon Yenta with a successful matchmaking service. Jennings interviews clients personally and mentally stores countless pieces of information about them that he deems relevant for making a match, which he calls a connection. Jennings remembers if you like horseradish and what your first concert was. In his brain, he cross-references compatibility through such trivia and then spits out the name of your perfect partner. Sometimes he'll set clients up with two matches at once in a daily double date. He'll also attend your first date and throw out categories of questions for you to answer together so the conversation never lulls. Jennings says, it's always exciting to see love spark in a lightning round about the New Deal or potent potables. And if you do find romance, Jennings is happy to grow your family with his other business, Ken Vitro Fertilization.
Ken Jennings, Jeopardy champ, matchmaker. And your last story of Quiz Show Champs looking for a new start comes from Mike Birbiglia.
On March 16th, 2007, there was the first ever three-way tie on Jeopardy. Those three contestants became good friends and even went in on a timeshare in Palm Springs, California, where they conceived the idea for a Jeopardy-themed musical called Triple Jeopardy, the story of three game show contestants who refused to put their friendship in Jeopardy. They hired Hairspray composer Mark Shaman to write the score, and this week they opened Triple Jeopardy in Branson, Missouri at the beautiful Yakov Smirnoff Theater. The set includes a 90-foot-tall replica of the Jeopardy board, with the light bulbs replaced by spinning sparklers, and the part of Alex Trebek is played by newscaster Geraldo Rivera, who insists on wearing his pink-tinted glasses and often no shirt. Songs include Alex, I Believe My Buzzer Is Broken, and a remake of the 90s hit What Is Love, Alex? Baby Don't Hurt Me. A reviewer from the Branson Tri-Lake News writes, this is just not good. And we are in Branson, Missouri.
All right. Here are your choices. One of these is a true story of someone who's gone on to Jeopardy to, if not greater things, other things. Is it from Adam Felber Watson, the supercomputer, now running a food truck in Texas? From Faith Saley, Ken Jennings, opening up a matchmaking business? Or from Mike Birbiglia, three Jeopardy champions who wrote a musical about three Jeopardy champions? Which of these is the real story of Jeopardy champions in the news?
Oh, none of them seem realistic to me, but I wish Mike's were true. I really
do. Yes, that would be awesome.
I'd like to go with number one, and everybody kind of messed up reading that one, so maybe that's the clue.
Oh, really? Oh.
Everybody.
All of you, Adam.
We apologize.
Sorry.
All right, so by process of elimination, you've selected Adam Felber's story of Watson the supercomputer now running a food truck. Well, we spoke to somebody intimately familiar with this new career for a Jeopardy champion.
The computer comes up with some wild ideas for dishes, like Austrian chocolate burrito, Vietnamese apple kebabs, and we start cooking.
That was James Brissione. He is the director of culinary development at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York City, and he is known as Chef to Watson, the supercomputer at the food truck. Congratulations, Jason. You got it right. You've earned a point for Adam.
And, but
and the other voices in his head, yes.
Yeah.
And you've won our prize.
Really red.
And you've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering device, whatever it may be. Thank you so much for playing with us today.
Thank you.
Well done, sir.
There you go.
And now the game where after a long and varied career, a person gets quizzed about the one thing they never bothered to learn. It's called Not My Job. A few decades ago, an American drummer living in England joined a guitarist and this singer with one name that no one remembers. They formed a band called The Police and basically provided the soundtrack for the 1980s. Since then, Stuart Copeland has scored movies, theater performances, and even occasionally gotten that old band together again. Stuart Copeland, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, thank you very much.
So just to get this situated, for those of us who remember The Police so well, in that band, you were the drummer, of course. Mm-hmm. Was it like a Beatles thing where like there was the cute one, the smart one, the dreamy? Did you have a nickname?
No, none of us were smart. It was like the dumb one, the idiot, and the ugly one.
And which one were you, sir?
I think I was all three.
All right. And let's go into your background. I always assume that rock and roll stars always have scrappy upbringings on the streets.
Oh, yes, the hard streets of Beirut, Lebanon, as a matter of fact, which is pretty hard scrabble.
It is. You grew up in Beirut.
Yeah.
And was this because your parents were working there? Or were
yes, I was a diplomat. My daddy was a spy.
He and was?
Absolutely. He was fighting the Cold War for you and me.
And how long were you in Beirut? When was this? It was like the
50s? I was pretty much over there until about 15. Then my father's cover was blown, and he packed his family out of Dodge and sent me to boarding school in England.
Boarding school in England. Well, this is a very typical story for an American rock and roll star, don't you think?
Join the club.
Yeah, gosh.
Stuart, when you were little, did you know your dad was a spy?
No, I didn't find out until I was in college in California.
How did that conversation go? Oh, he wrote a book.
I literally found out about it on the liner notes of my father's book.
Really?
I've been kind of whispering at school. You know, my brother Miles came home one day and said, "Dad, is it true you're a spy?" And he looks at him hard, and he says, "Son, who wants to know?"
Whoa. So how do you go from being this kid in this boarding school in England to one of the three members of basically the biggest rock band of the 1980s?
Of London in 1977. That was pretty hard scrabble too, the punk revolution.
You were in the midst of that whole sort of punk thing coming
out? Yeah, we were a couple years too old for it, Stingo and I. We were actual professional musicians. We were about 24.
Did you just call your collaborator Stingo?
Yeah.
Was that his original?
That's one of the nicer things that I call him.
Obviously, you know, the Police became enormously huge. I you couldn't turn on a radio around 1982 without hearing your songs.
Was it ever tricky having that be your band name legally, where you'd go to a hotel and be like, "Hello, we're the Police," and they'd be like, "Here's $5,000.
Well, party's ruined. You know, we arrive at a party. You know, we're in some town. Hey, someone's throwing a party. Come on now." We go down to the party, and we arrive, and we can hear the sound of toilets flushing.
Just out of curiosity, how did you guys pick that name for yourself?
I actually started with the name of Expletive the Police. I've got my diaries from that period. I've got all the accounts of what we paid for the PA, how much we paid for the curry dinner, and I've got a list of band names.
Really?
Each one lamer than the other.
Was it like
Heavy Artillery, Teeth Attack, London Teeth. I was into teeth for some reason. Teeth, you know, the Jaws of Hell.
Dentists.
How about, the Mounties.
The Mounties would have been awesome.
Well, we didn't have any other law enforcement imagery. It was mostly teeth.
Teeth. And you went with, ironically, with an untooth name. Now, I don't want to, I mean, obviously, you know, the Police broke up some many years ago, and you've done a lot of things. Sting went off, of course, to have a pretty well-known solo career as a singer. You put out some solo records, and you had some other bands, but you've, would you say, primarily been composing? You've done a lot of film scores.
Yeah, that's what I did. I had 20 years before The Mast as a Hollywood film composer.
And you did such classic films that we all remember as Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Hey, I did some good movies, too.
You did the score to Talk Radio, right?
Yes.
I thought it was a great movie, and I haven't seen it since the, I guess, 1990 or whenever it came out. In my memory, the closing credits involved a piece of music for Touch Tone Phone.
My most popular song that I didn't write.
Oh, you didn't write that one? Okay.
No.
It's not on the soundtrack.
So it's like somebody playing a touchstone phone?
That's your best track. Oh, my favorite track of yours was,
it wasn't my favorite, but it's not on the soundtrack. That's
that's
asking.
Very kind of you to say so now.
And I love that
No
song.
One talks that way to Mike Birbiglia.
Mike, I never would have
done that. No. You're being teased. You are a professional rock and roll drummer. You were a drummer for one of the great rock bands of all time. Please be truthful with us. Do you hate drum solos too, right?
I played two in my career. One was on the Letterman Show.
Yeah.
The other was on the Serengeti in Africa in a cage surrounded by hungry lions, which was a scene from my film, The Rhythmatist.
Did the lions do what the rest of us do with drum solos and turn around and go get a beer?
No, they did not.
What did they do?
They had been starved for a few days so as to be photogenically aggressive. The cage that I was playing in was festooned with steak, and the only thing was that these ones here came running right up to the thing, and they're grabbing at the cage, and then I started playing my drums, and then they ran away. And so, to get the shot, I had to pretend to hit the drums and not actually hit them because they'd all go running off again. So they went off, but they'd come back pretty quick for the meat, and they'd be yanking at the cage, and one of them got his paw under the cage, and his talon stuck into the machine head on the front of the bass drum, and was pulling at the thing. It started to go weird. That was the other drum solo I played in my career.
That's when it started to get weird? I'm starting to feel like this story is like a drum solo.
Stuart Copeland, we are delighted to talk to you.
That was...
I'm moving on.
That was
on,
Adam Felber. Adam, that was very funny, I thought. But I thought it was a little offensive.
I was a little over the line there. Well, Stuart Copeland, what a delight to talk to you. But we have asked you here to play a game.
Yes.
Stuart Copeland, we have asked you here to play a game. We're calling...
You Have the Right to Wonder What the Heck I'm Doing.
You are in the band The Police, of course, but what do you know about the real police? We're going to ask you three questions about questionable police tactics, and if you answer two of them right, you'll win our prize from one of our listeners, Carl's voice on the home answering machine. Carl, who is musician Stuart Copeland playing for?
Stuart is playing for Peter Jansen of New Haven, Indiana.
All right. Peter, I'm here for you.
All right, here we go, Stuart.
Buddy.
All right, Stuart, here we go. In 2011, an undercover sting, run by the New York Police Department went terribly wrong. Why? Was it A, before going to the steam room with the suspects, the lead undercover officer forgot about his NYPD Forever tattoo? Was it B, they set up a fake barber shop to lure crooks, but the policeman slash barber did a terrible job cutting hair? Or C, the cop who met the suspects kept trying to crack up the guys listening back in the van by making fart noises into his hidden body mic?
Let's go with the last one.
That is
on.
A great story. It'd be funny. But in fact, it was the barber shop is what happened. They set up a barber shop, and they had a cop cut hair who didn't know how to cut hair.
Well, that's pretty good.
So nobody came back to the barber shop, including the other undercover cops.
Right, yeah, who all looked like hell.
It was a disaster. All right, you still have two more chances. It
wasn't half as bad as the plastic surgery clinic.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
Set up.
Next question. Another group of NYPD officers arrested two suspicious youths on a drug charge for possession of what? A, some Jolly Rancher candies. B, a jar of Guy Fieri's donkey sauce. Or C, a rusty ShamWow.
Well, I am unfamiliar with all three of those things, which equips me perfectly to make a choice. I am going to go with number two.
I like your logic, but it was in fact the Jolly Rancher candies. The arresting officer thought they were crystal meth.
Oh, man.
Okay, here is your last question. A Tennessee cop got into trouble last August when he fired his service weapon. For what reason? A, to signal the start of a Pinewood Derby race for eight-year-olds. B, to knock his lost Frisbee out of a tree. Or C, to keep a wild turkey from pooping on his cruiser.
He got fired for any of those things?
Well, he was disciplined for doing these things.
All right.
He was not fired.
Okay, number one.
You're going to go with the Pinewood Derby, that he started a Pinewood Derby race for eight-year-olds, little balsa wood cars, and he fired his gun in the air to start it. It was the turkey. Now, in his defense,
scores his own conversation.
I love it. In his defense, the guy says, look, I wasn't trying to hit the turkey. It was just a warning shot. But they said, you can't fire your weapon to scare a bird off your police cruiser. They reprimanded him. Carl, how did Stuart Copeland do on our quiz?
Not too well, Peter. He had no correct answers out of three choices.
Stuart Copeland is one of the founding members of The Police, as well as being an acclaimed composer for film and theater. He's re-edited version of the classic silent film Ben-Hur, A Tale of Crisis, premiering at the Virginia Arts Festival on April 19th. Stuart Copeland, what fun to talk to you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Faith Saley, Mike Birbiglia, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl sends his troops to occupy the Rhymian Peninsula. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. That one was good. Seriously. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Adam, proving that hipsters, the New York Times, and Western civilization itself are all pretty much done for. We read this week in the New York Times that what is the hot new hip trend?
Bees. Beekeeping.
Oh, bees. Bees is old, man.
Oh, yeah?
Bees is beekeeping, artisanal honeymaking, that's old. This is the new thing.
I will opt for a hint.
Mr. Peanut was into these things before they were...
Oh, yes, I did read about this. Monocles.
Monocles.
They're wearing monocles.
According to the Times, monocles are the hip new trend among the hip new trendy set.
They actually do help with beekeeping.
Yes. For evidence, the Times offers a picture of a guy with a monocle. The Times says that monocles are in because hipsters have run out of everything else to secretly mock us all with.
We are truly in a golden age of hipsterism.
It's true.
I live in Brooklyn, which is sort of hipsterville. And the other day, I'm not making this up, I saw a probably about 16-year-old kid in a Nazi soldier's uniform.
Oh, man.
Not making this up. And I just didn't know what to do because I'm like, okay, it's not Halloween. I don't live in a part of Brooklyn that's that hip. And and what happens if there's a Nazi invasion in a few days? And they're like, Mike, did you have any signs? And I'd be like, well, there was one. I saw a teenager wearing a Nazi uniform, and he seemed nice. And, you know, they say, you know, call 311. If you see something, say something. But I wouldn't know what to say. But the monocle thing, are they prescription monocles?
Apparently.
Some are.
Some are. The people are getting prescriptions. And apparently some of them are used for reading. They're magnifying.
Are there any sun monocles yet?
No. No sun monocles.
Well, then this thing is not over.
Adam, other than the electric toothbrush, dental technology hasn't really grown by leaps and bounds, but that's all about to change with the introduction of a new toothbrush that does what?
Texts your teeth.
It actually texts somebody, but not your teeth.
Your dentist.
It does. It texts your dentist.
Sure it does.
It spies on you for your dentist. The toothbrush uses wireless signaling to track your brushing habits and then reports them to the dentist. It's like having the NSA in your own bathroom.
So easy to cheat it.
How would you do that?
Just turn it on and go do something else.
Well, it uses GPS. It can track its own movements.
Oh,
you'd
really?
Have to stand there and shake it in the air.
Oh, wow.
Right.
That's what I do anyway. Yeah.
It's weird. It's like, how did they figure out a way to make the guy who like routinely spends an hour with his hand in your mouth seem even more intrusive?
I don't like where technology's going.
I don't look forward to the day when you find out that your toothbrush has been ratting you out. Because you go to the dentist and you're expecting to meet the hygienist in the chair, and instead you walk in and the dentist is sitting there behind a desk next to the toothbrush. Toothbrush won't look you in the eye.
It's a dentervention.
Yeah.
You got to try.
Mike, we were shocked by a report that came out this week that says if climate change continues, we may see, tragically, the end of what?
This is my biggest fear.
Yeah.
Which is that I don't know a lot of stuff. human beings.
That's possibly true, but that's not what the report that came out this week.
This is more dire.
This is actually more dire.
Water.
I think even more important to our lifestyle, my lifestyle, than water.
See, not mine, but.
Yeah.
Cats.
I say we keep going in this direction.
I feel like I might be getting worse at this point.
You can ask for a hint.
Yeah, hints.
We always ask for
hints.
We always
ask for hints.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Here's your hint. Tortilla chips are going to be pretty lonely in the warmer future.
Oh, right. It's cats. I knew. Tortilla chips... Which would mean it's salsa?
Or guacamole?
Adjacent, guacamole, yes. Guacamole.
Are you serious?
I am serious as death, my friend.
Wow. The end of guacamole is the answer?
That's the answer.
Did Faith know that?
Did you see how much guacamole I had backstage? There was some in
the
green room.
That was why?
The report I mentioned was the annual report of the Chipotle restaurant chain. This is true. And they told investors that climate change may someday limit the availability of avocados and thus guacamole. They say it's not imminent, though. We still have adequate guacamole supplies, but you might want to start stockpiling it.
It's going to start slowly, though. Don't you think you'll go to Chipotle, you'll say, I'd like guacamole. They'll say, it's $47 extra. Is that okay?
Yeah. There will be a black market in guacamole. There'll be guys hanging around behind the Chipotle going, I got guac.
That salsa doesn't look like, you know, it's going to do that for you.
Yeah. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming shows in Kalamazoo on March 20th and San Diego, California on May 1st. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Colleen Cohen from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hey, Colleen, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm fine. How are things in Grand Rapids?
Oh, they're all right. A little cold.
Oh, yeah. But we just found out that in Grand Rapids they rescinded a law in which people now can be willfully annoying. It used
I
to be illegal. It's true, so go for it.
Okay.
Well, Carl Castle, Colleen, is going to read for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
Our peer review's gotten more rigorous. We want science to feel less ad libris. Nonsensical jargon is never a bargain. We're ridding these abstracts of
gibberish?
Right! 120 science articles have been pulled from various journals because they're total gibberish. MIT students had programmed a computer to spit out nonsense science babble. It got published all over the place. Here's an example. I quote, given the current status of efficient archetypes, leading analysts famously desires the emulation of congestion control. That got published. Now, it doesn't mean anything. Makes no sense. Making it really different from the scientific writing that does mean something and makes no sense. The good news, though, if nonsense science writing works, then nonsense radio writing can maximize banana optometrist school wagon.
Purple.
Here's your next limerick.
Like McNuggets with bones in appearance, our wings have not shown perseverance. Our last roll of the dice is a huge slash in price. We're having a mighty wing.
Clearance?
Yes, clearance. Very good. McDonald's created the Mighty Wing, a real chicken wing, to provide a more natural, less processed alternative to the McNugget. And America was like, why is there a hard, bony thing in my McNugget? They've got 10 million unsold wings now, and now they're on clearance, 60 cents each instead of a dollar. If McDonald's can't sell them all, don't worry. You will love washing down your McRib later on with the new Bone McFlurry.
That's always promising when when poultry is on clearance.
Yes, that's good. Here is your last limerick.
Though scientists try to inspire us, some findings are far more desirous. After thousands of years, an infection appears. They have thawed a Siberian
virus?
Right. Much like Sleeping Beauty.
I was going to go with Miley Cyrus.
Yeah. Much like Sleeping Beauty awoke after 100 years of slumber by a kiss, a giant virus has been woken up after being frozen in Siberia for 30,000 years. Scientists claim the virus is not a threat to humans, but have compared it to influenza and something called HIV. They say thawing the virus will allow them to better understand our planet and answer scientific questions such as, what's the worst that could happen when we thaw this ancient giant virus? Carl, how did Colleen do on our quiz?
Colleen, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or home answering machine.
Well done. Congratulations, Colleen.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm a virus, an infectious particle, and not a thug, a pirate, the genuine article, Ebola, chicken pox, West Nile, influenza, yellow fever, AIDS, herpes, SARS, I'm coming right at you. Not a cell, not an independent organism, don't even have my own.
It's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place. Peter, Adam Felber, and Mike Birbiglia each has 3 points. Faith Saley has 2.
Okay. Faith, you're in, surprisingly, third place, so you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Federal officials announced Thursday that people can keep their insurance plans that don't comply with the standards of blank for 2 more years.
Obamacare.
Right. This week, the Senate blocked President Obama's choice to head the Civil Rights Division of the blank department.
Justice.
Right. Although Ukrainian officials called it an illegitimate decision, the Crimea parliament voted Thursday to rejoin blank.
Russia.
Right. This week, the U.S. Mint announced that it has no evidence linking the stash of blanks found by a California couple to a robbery.
Gold coins.
Right. A discount store customer in Kansas was injured after getting in a fight with a blank.
Parakeet.
No, a self-checkout machine, although parakeet is often a good guess in the show. Because of the recent breach of customer data at their stores, a high-level executive at blank has resigned.
Target.
Right. Officials in Chicago announced this week that the tradition of dyeing the Chicago River green would go on this year, even if the river is blank.
Frozen.
Yes. A new study finds that 1 in 10 people believe that the programming language HTML is blank.
An STD.
That's right. 10% of people thought HTML is an STD. Ironically, the people most familiar with HTML have the lowest incidence of STDs. The survey, and these are all true, by the way, we did not make this up, also found that 15% of Americans believe software is a term for comfortable clothing. 18% think Blu-ray is a marine animal, and 23% believe MP3 is a robot from Star Wars.
Love that guy.
That's a mean study there.
It is.
Yeah. Hey, Granny, I'm going to make you look dumb.
Oh. Carl, how did Faith do in our quiz?
Faith had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. She now has 16 points, and Faith has taken the lead.
You're so fast, too. Yeah.
All right, Mike, we have flipped a coin. We flipped a coin, and Mike has elected to go
when,
next.
When you were blank. Doing it with Faith, and you would say blank, my mind would go blank. So I'll do my best. If possible, I'd like to just do her question.
It's not an instruction, it's an opportunity.
Okay.
Here we go. 12 Years a Slave and Gravity were the big winners at this year's blank ceremony.
Oscars.
Yes, on Thursday, the social networking site Blank announced that it will be changing its news feed.
Facebook?
Right. Jurors heard testimony in the murder trial of South African runner Blank
Pistorio.
This week.
Is that that case? No?
Yeah, it's close enough. It's Pistorius.
Pistorius?
In an article this week, the newly relaunched Newsweek magazine claims to have unmasked the creator of the cryptocurrency Blank.
Bitcoin?
Right. A Florida man arrested for drunk driving explained to police that he was drunk, but he was just trying to Blank.
Go home.
No, he was drunk, he said, but he was just trying to, you know, drive it off. Forecasters issued an alert Thursday saying there's a 50% chance the weather phenomenon known as El Blanco will return this year.
Guapo?
Muy guapo.
No. Dorado.
El Nino. This week, meat and cheese were added to the list of foods that will make people blank earlier.
Die.
Yes. Dove deodorant has agreed to scrap billboards in New Jersey. That blank.
Drive it off.
No. The billboards refer to New Jersey as, do you know?
No.
They refer to New Jersey.
Dirty state?
No, as the, quote, armpit of America.
Oh, that's
the billboard reads.
Thing, yeah.
The billboard reads, Dear New Jersey, when people call you the armpit of America, take it as a compliment. Sincerely, Dove. Dove apologized, saying they only intended to, quote, call attention to the fact that armpits can and should be considered beautiful. They've since replaced the billboards with ads for Dove's new back hair conditioner. Carl, how did Mike Birbiglia do in his debut in our quiz?
Mike had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, but Faith still has the lead with 16.
All right. So how many then, Carl, does Adam need to win?
7 to win.
7 to win. Adam, this is for the game. The son-in-law of Al-Qaeda leader Blank went on trial in Manhattan this week for terrorist activities.
Osama bin Laden.
Right. John Travolta inspired thousands of jokes when at the Oscars he introduced Blank as Adele Dazeem.
Adina Manzel.
That's good. United Airlines announced this week that it will begin strictly enforcing rules regarding the size of Blank.
Carry on.
Right. Hillary Clinton drew fire this week for comparing Vladimir Putin's actions in the Crimea with Blank's actions.
The Nazis.
Right. Police in India were able to solve a murder mystery after they got help from the victim's Blank.
Tiger.
No, talking parrot. I told you. Dennis Farina, Tom Clancy, and Ralph Waite were among those notably absent from the Oscars Blank segment this year.
Obituary segment.
Yeah, in memoriam. Five of the eight Blanks swallowed by a sinkhole in Kentucky were recovered this week.
Cars.
Yes, Corvettes. Police in India have failed to respond to the hundreds of emailed complaints they've received since 2006 because they blanked.
Forgot the password.
Right.
Lost the password.
Yeah. Exactly right. 8 years ago, they lost the password. Haven't been able to figure out. Police initially said they weren't responding due to a, quote, technical problem, but when pressed, it turned out that the technical problem was that somebody changed the password to something harder to remember than the word password.
It was password one.
Yeah. I hate that. Carl, did Adam do well enough to win?
Well, he had 7 correct answers for 14 more points, so at 17 points, Adam Felber is this week's champion.
Oh, my gosh. Well done, Adam. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what vocabulary words will appear on the newly revamped SATs. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Kobo, partnering with independent bookstores to provide 4 million ebook titles and a variety of e-readers. Store located at indiebound.org. The William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And CarMax, offering more than 35,000 used cars and trucks, online and in stores from coast to coast. Learn more at carmax.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions' Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Our intern is Seth, from Justin to Kelly. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers Gulester Logic and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover, Miles Dernboss, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Mr. Ian Chillog, and the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what new words will we see on the SAT? Faith Saley.
In an effort to preserve some old-school SAT words but add some relevant pop culture, 2 new words are Chiwetel Ejiofor-Behrens and Lupita Nyong'o-Probrium.
Mike Birbiglia.
A future SAT word will be Facebook. Example sentence, remember Facebook?
And Adam Felber.
The word will be perfect, as in that thing that each and every one of you snowflakes are. Aw, just now, take your 1600 and go, you scamps.
Well, if any of those words appear, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Adam Felber, Faith Saley, and to Mike McGinley and Mike. It's great to have you here. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR.